Public Safety Subcommittee for Wednesday, March 23rd, 2005. We will be reviewing agency program prioritization work to date for House Bill 5061, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, Senate Bill 5530, the Oregon Youth Authority, House Bill 5016, the Department of Corrections, House Bill 5057, the Oregon State Police. In addition, we will begin the agency program prioritization for House Bill 5044, which is the Department of Justice. We'll conclude the meeting with some subcommittee announcements. We're going to be at ease for just a few minutes here. And if we can turn off the microphone. Senator Devlin will be arriving shortly, and members, we're going to run until about 2:30 today. I understand that our House members need to have some other business to take care of, and I'm going to need to step out for a meeting with the Speaker about 1:15. Shouldn't take too long. We're going to start with the Oregon Youth Authority. Mr. Jester, if you'll come forward with whomever you'd like to join you. And I'm going to ask Ms. Baker to walk us through the sheet that you have in front of us, which is a display of the results of the subcommittee rankings to date.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I apologize in advance because I think this will get confusing, but let me talk about how this is displayed on this sheet. Each member ranked each element high, medium, and low, and we scored a 1 for a high, a 2 for a medium, a 3 for a low, averaged those scores, and then because there were a number of scores that basically tied, we grouped them on this sheet. So if you look in the first two columns there, the shaded column, you can see the average rank for the first issue is 1, meaning basically that everyone scored at 1, a high, and that was the highest score in the subcommittee. So there are 4 program elements, if you will, that had that same average ranking, and so they're all ranked as number 1. And they include, as you move over to the fourth and fifth and sixth columns, they include 2 pieces of the residential foster care and individualized community services that were separately bundled, if you will, on the agency's original priority list. They include 3 pieces of parole and probation services that were, again, bundled differently on the agency's original priority list, 3 pieces of the facilities program, and then the debt service payment. So those all had the exact same numerical average score, so the same subcommittee rank. Clear so far? then the next set scored slightly lower on average, so those were ranked as number two for the purposes of this list. They included another piece of the residential foster care and individualized community services. They included the largest share of the Multnomah gang funding. They included two pieces of the capital improvement budget. Then the next set are shown as subcommittee rank number three. Their average score was 1.40. This is the first appearance of the county diversion and juvenile crime prevention money on this draft list. There's a small piece of the residential foster care and individualized community services, another small piece of Multnomah gang, another small piece of parole, another small piece of facilities. Turning over to page two, the fourth grouping averaged 1.60, again a small piece of residential foster care and individualized community services, a small piece of Multnomah gang funding, small piece of parole, and small piece of facilities. Then we get into the administration pieces, and including state government service charges, the program office related to community programs, and a little bit of capital improvement money. And then the next set of rankings, five, has some program pieces for the county diversion and juvenile crime prevention funding, some administration, adjustment for state government service charges, and then again a piece of the program office. And then categories six and seven include pieces of administration and the program office budget. So what this display does is take the numerical averages from the rankings that members turned in, group them by relative ranking. It does not obviously rank them from 1 through 35 or whatever the number would be, the way that you've seen in other agencies.
And our ranking was based on a high, medium, low approach, with the exception of Representative Hannah, who I believe used numerical.
Madam Chair, Representative Hannah did the high, medium, and low, and then also took a first effort at a program priority ranking.
Very good. Very good.
Trying to get an apple from the teacher.
comments from the members. Representative Hanson.
I think one thing it shows is that the lowest ranking programs were mediums.
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
You're finished?
Yeah.
How about, you know, the fact that we're dividing up this Multnomah County gang monies in each, is that listed? Is that listed in here three different times? Is that why we did that from each of the priorities?
Madam Chair, Representative was not, yes, it was listed on individual line items. If you remember, the way the agency presented theirs was sort of as a bundle across the continuum of services. And it makes it difficult then to try and reorganize that. And particularly at the bottom of this list, when you're looking at the administration and program office pieces that are, by virtue of this exercise, ranked at the bottom of the list, they're not necessarily tied to program reductions that they were in the agency's first presentation, and so it's probably not as intuitively aligned as it was originally in the agency's list.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hannah.
I don't have the luxury of having my copy that I put the additional ranking onto, but when you have an opportunity to look at that.
We have it here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My thinking was to use the high, medium, and low, which we each did, but because of the way the agency presented the budget, mm-hmm. it categorized budget options, which, as Representative Hansen mentioned, I don't think anybody ranked below medium. So in order to come up with a true ranking or a way to further delineate those items, I took it by program element in terms of if you put each of those together, then where would you rank those elements combined? So if you take a look at that and just as a starting place for others to look at, you'll get an idea. I think I ranked them 1 through 9 in terms of program elements that I combined. And it might just be a place to start the conversation.
I'm going to suggest taking Representative Hanna's example of working this through. I'm going to suggest to the members that we revisit our work individually, do the numerical ranking. I'd like to ask that members do the numerical ranking and get that back to Ms. Baker by 5 today. Is that reasonable for folks? Is that reasonable? Okay. And then Representative Hanna?
I'm going to change the subject, so if you're not...
Okay. Just to make sure I have agreement on the 5 o'clock deadline. And then we can revisit this again tomorrow.
If not 5 o'clock, 5 o'clock tonight, first thing tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. That'll work. Okay. Do you need something else?
I think that we'll need to talk about how to manage that in terms of bringing it forward again, because technically forward the
just okay. I'm gonna leave that discussion in Representative Hansen's hands.
I need to pass the gavel. Mr. Chair, I would suggest to make it somewhat easier in terms of ranking, what I can do is look at the consolidated program approach that's more similar to what you did in other agencies, unless you want to rank order all of the pieces. There are 37 of them.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Baker, it might be fair, in order that we're comparing apples to apples, as it might be, that at least we go through and identify the 9 programs that are, and each of you could just highlight the 9 different programs, because there's elements within each. And Ms. Baker, since you have my sheet, you might help us. And then I would like to get a bit of an explanation from Mr. Jester on the capital improvement piece. I'd like to hear some additional details.
Do you want me to go through the program list first? Okay. The first one that shows up on your list is the residential foster care and individualized community services. And then parole is the next, which is parole and probation. Facilities, debt service.
Ms. Baker, yes. I'm sorry, can I interrupt? We're not reading these in order, by the way. This isn't the ranking of these items.
Sure.
The 9 items.
I'm reading them as they show up on the prioritized list that you have in front of you. So it's a logistical way of doing it. Okay, and then there is separated out individualized community services, Multnomah Gang. I believe Representative Hanna included that in the residential foster care and individualized community services piece.
So we don't rank that separately.
I guess I would leave it. It is an individual program element in the sense that it's a discrete pot of money, but within their budget, it's within the overall community services.
It combines into that other one if you get into one of the more preferred budget levels, I guess.
I think to minimize the number of things that you're ranking, you would combine that. Then capital improvement is next on the list.
Aye.
County diversion juvenile crime prevention. And then on page two, starting on page two, we have administration. State government service charges. And the program office. So that should be nine.
Okay. There was another question on 4A.
Actually, I have two now. If I could, Mr. Chairman, are you clear with those categories so that if you have question about that, you'd know how we combine them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanna, yes.
Okay, great. Then my first question then, could you talk just a bit more about the capital improvement programs? Because we had some question there.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna. I'm going to ask Ms. Olson to go through that list for you now and be happy to answer any further questions if they're not answered in the list.
For the record, I'm Karen Olson, the Assistant Director of Business Services with the Oregon Youth Authority. The capital improvements budget is made up of, starts with a list of 27 different capital projects in the areas of roof replacement, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, working on building exteriors, and other types of improvements such as replumbing buildings, replacing electrical panels, those types of things. We have a four-year plan that constitutes slightly over $1 million in these types of projects. And this budget would fund about $630,000 of those projects. They basically deal with keeping buildings usable and keeping the systems inside of them usable. So you've got plumbing, electrical, and the sort of HVAC things that deteriorate over time. And you need to go in and either make major repairs to or you need to replace them.
Follow up. The 20 capital projects were the $630,000. The four-year plan was, again, how much?
Representative Hanna, the four-year plan has 27 projects in it, and we would select from those 27 to get to an amount of $630,000 that we could accomplish in 2005-07. Then the rest of those we would look at holding over into the next biennium.
Follow up again, Mr. Chair. So I want to make sure it does not include any replacement for the, we call them the tent structures, I don't know what you call that. That's not in this plan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, there is some funding in this plan for repairs of the tent structures, but there isn't any capital construction which would be, you know, creating units to replace those.
I want to go just a bit further on that. When we saw those tent structures, and I don't remember the years, but we heard that they were intended for some number of years, and we had far exceeded that number of years. So if we're going to put some money into repairing them, what's the timeline that you're thinking until you just are throwing money in the wind here on those structures?
Chair, Representative Hanna, those structures were built in 1995 with an expected life of 10 to 12 years. So we're really hitting the end of their useful life for a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week type of operation. We not only have issues with the outside, I think that you saw with the membrane, but the inside structures were not built quite as well as permanent structures, and so they get beaten up more in that day-to-day activity.
Any further OYA questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Mr. Chair, do you have another comment?
There should be a version or a paperclip with three of them, Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, Department of Corrections, and State Police in front of you. Hopefully these won't quite be as complex as the Youth Authority based on how the agency put it together. Looking at the one for Public Safety Standards and Training, or DPSST, the far left column is the average score from high, low, and medium, or high, medium, low. Again, high being one, low being three. And then the second column from the left is just the ranking based on those averages. And you can see that there has been some movement. For example, the administrative and support services were moved down a bit, as well as the private security licensing and training. But generally, things aren't too far off the agency's priority. Any comments or
Any comments or questions on the public safety standards and training?
The next one is Department of Corrections. Same type of thing where you have high, low, medium, high, one being high, three being low. So the first column there is the average score. The next column is the numerical rank. If you go to the bottom of those, you will notice there's some fours. I suggest that you don't try to rank the agency-wide overhead and operating infrastructure. A couple people didn't rank those. And really, those would either can't be reduced, as in many cases the agency-wide overhead, or would be reduced as you make changes above in the administrative or in the program structure. So I left those at the bottom. They're not meant to be at the bottom of the list. They're meant to be sort of considered a little differently. The shaded items there are those that have moved 10 spaces or more from the department's priorities. Your wish was to put debt service at the top. So the two items there, the debt service for existing loan and the loan repayments, are at the top of the list. And you can see there how things have changed otherwise. I do need to just make a statement. For example, the bottom shaded one, line 36 in the new rankings, the institution legal library. Keep in mind, many of these things are constitutionally required, and you could probably not eliminate that for sure, and probably not reduce it very much if you so chose either. And that's not all that different from a number of them in there. The difficulty with corrections is you really are looking at two major programs and lots of systems in that program, a prison system, or a prison program and a community corrections program, and then lots of things internal of that. So it does make it a little difficult to break apart. But there was movement to push some of the programs like the alcohol and drug and cognitive up the list, at least some, recognizing, I think, the comments made by a few of you regarding recidivism and the need to treat, make an attack at trying to keep people from coming back.
Okay. Any questions on corrections? Now, we're reprioritizing by number. Now the high, lows, and mediums that we did?
I took the highs, lows, and one, twos, and threes, and then averaged them, and that's really what the far left-hand column is. And then I just put a prioritized number on those, because the co-chairs do really want to try us, get us to move toward a one to whatever number. And if things had an equal numbers other than the debt service, if there were three ones, I used the department's priority as a secondary sort, for lack of a better way of doing it.
Mr. Chair, I can, the Institute Legal Library, I understand, that that's got to be done and it's got to be funded, but other than that, is it appropriate to ask the department if they see something else that in our prioritized list that we didn't take into account?
Well, I, I would think it'd be very appropriate. I mean, if they're...
I just urge caution on the schedule that we have the state police to go through and then Department of Justice to go through the whole process, and I believe you're going to lose two more members at 2:30.
If you can just be brief on the ones that we probably need to highlight and then as the ones that may be problematic for us to go into in phase two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, thanks for the opportunity, and I appreciate the ranking that you have done. I am Sue Acuff, Department of Corrections, for the record. I'll identify just two things, if I might, and that's one, which is now ranked number 26, the offender information. Included in that is our sentence computation unit, and that's a very critical unit to make sure that we have those serving the appropriate time for them. So I do have some concern there. And the rank number 33, institution administration and support, is another one that's similar to our operating infrastructure. That is the entire administration distributed out into the institutions. So it's the superintendents, it's the assistants, it's all of their support. It's that whole structure which is outside of central, which is critical to the management of those institutions.
Would you see a problem if we tried to get by without that?
I think we'd have a problem. Yes, sir. So I would highlight those two and thank the committee for allowing me to speak.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman? Ms. Acuff, what about the legal library? Is there it may be, what did you say, constitutional, but do you have to spend $1.87 million on it? I mean, is there a number beyond that? Is there any other adjusted number for that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanna, today I would not be able to tell you that. The majority of that would support the 14 physicians who would be responsible for administering that program.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
That was important to get those two. I think it was important that they, you know, say that we haven't made a big mistake.
Yeah. Mr. Wilson, would you like to bring me up to date on where we are? And thank you, Representative Hanson.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm not sure if any there are further comments to the Department of Corrections, but did note that there were two items of the department mentioned
three.
That could
three.
Be problematic.
Three.
Legal library, yeah. Two, I'm sorry. So those are the three that they mentioned that could be problematic in the ranking.
Yeah.
Okay. And did we establish their thoughts about the problems with the rankings on the record? We did. Okay. Great.
And, Madam Chair, if there are no, you know, sort of movement, if you want to move those, I will, in a transmittal memo or something, the co-chairs make mention that there was some concern by the department and actually probably, you know, some concern by members regarding those items.
Okay. Are we ready to move on, then, to the Oregon State Police?
Okay. Madam Chair, the State Police has done a little, just slightly different because... let's just say that too many of you had too many highs on your list to differentiate some of the rankings, which I guess is probably good for the state police in your thinking. So many of you had already ranked from 1 to 24, and I asked the members that had not ranked from 1 to 24 to try to do that so we could get a better ranking. So the average rank on the left represents that ranking. And then, so we're a little more detailed on this one. And then the second one, of course, represents just the 1 to 24 as the others. And the shaded ones here are those that actually moved more than five spaces, just to show which ones had moved more than the others.
So where's the, excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Wisnack.
Thank you. Doug, where's the, so the department priority is in the middle there?
It's right. It goes from 1 to 6.
Okay, so 6 and 11 and 13 and 22.
And I do know that many members mentioned trying to move up the high-intensity drug trafficking because it was quite low.
Now, have we heard from the department on on these results?
Madam Chair, they have not had a chance to speak.
Would the Oregon State Police please come forward, representatives of the superintendent, if you would identify yourselves for the record, and then we are eager to hear your comments on the subcommittee's work.
Good afternoon. For the record, Madam Chair, I'm Timothy McLean, Lieutenant Colonel of State Police, representing the superintendent, along with Mr. Ken Weiss here.
I should note for the record that the superintendent spoke with me this morning. He's called to Portland, an important, very important meeting, high-level meeting with the FBI, and it was clear that he needed to be there, and he has good people representing him here this afternoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To answer the question, I believe.
Yes.
Myself and, of course, Mr. Weiss back here, we received this 15 minutes ago or so here, as you did. And on initial review of it, we don't see any issues here that, at this point, obviously I'd like to take it back and share with the superintendent and other staff, but as you can see, some of these numbers are fairly close, or the priority is fairly close between our thinking and the committee's input. So we appreciate that.
Did you wish to comment?
Madam Chair, no, I concur.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, any other comments?
I guess I would, Madam Chair, that I think, you know, to me this is better, Doug, as far as helping you and helping us look at, instead of doing how much the high, low, medium, I think this was easier for you to do them all when you get. And even with 24, we were able to do it pretty good. It's feedback for the future years of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Representative Hannah.
Madam Chair, the one thing in this, with 24 items, the range isn't that great. But, Doug, I don't know if you've seen some of the others where they showed the range. And depending on how many people participate, it's interesting to see the range. And surprisingly, it's fairly close. But
I can put something together. If I expanded the worksheet, your scores are over here on the left.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just, for a point of reference, it is an interesting dynamic to look at. We worked on DHS this morning, and surprisingly, there's a lot less that are a long ways apart than there are those that are close.
Yes. I think, too, and speaking for myself, that it was helpful to look at the ranking activity in two ways, the high, medium, low, and then being challenged to go back and do the numerical piece. So, just a comment. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Okay, so we have consensus here, and we are ready to move on to item 2 on the agenda, which is the agency program prioritization for House Bill 5044, the Department of Justice. Good afternoon, Mr. Attorney General. This is a huge week for you. I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate Attorney General Myers for the report. The release of the report, the findings around the use of deadly force. Please share with us the exact title of the task force and the name of the report, and tell the members who have not seen that report how they can obtain it, if you would.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The name of the task force was Attorney General's Task Force on Deadly Force, addressing the issue of the use of deadly force by law enforcement in Oregon. And the title of the report itself, if I recall correctly, was something like When Duty and Life Collide. As it happens, we distributed or are distributing copies of the reports to all the members of this subcommittee as well as the members of the House and Senate committees on judiciary. So I think probably in your offices by now, somewhere in your accumulated materials, you have or will soon have a copy of the report.
And there will be a hearing, colleagues, on the report and the bill, Senate Bill 301, tomorrow, 1 o'clock, in the Senate Judiciary Committee. So I'll be there for a few minutes before coming here. But again, on the record, I just want to say thank you, Mr. Attorney General, for the quality of your leadership around these issues, very difficult issues, but they have been looked at very thoughtfully, in a reflective manner, and in a manner that's also been constructively critical. And again, I just applaud the leadership that you have brought to the subject, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your concerning leadership as well on the issue.
Mr. Wilson, would you like to introduce what we're doing here?
Madam Chair, again, members of the subcommittee, this is what was passed on this morning and very early to your office. And if you want to do it like we did yesterday, I'll just go through the lines, and I thoroughly encourage the Attorney General and his staff to chime in to correct me or augment my comments on each of these items. Number one there is legal services to state government. This really is one of the primary missions of the Attorney General, if not the primary mission. It is the services that his staff and he provide to the various agencies. Really, the demand for these services are the result of services requested by the agencies and not necessarily work done by the Attorney General. So if Agency X needs help, they're going to call him. He's expected to provide it, or his staff. So the demand for the services are generated elsewhere. So it is things like contract review, representing them in court, looking at various transactions, looking at family law issues, a whole host of issues. So it is a rather large line item. Number two, again, another separate primary act or responsibility given to the Attorney General by statute is the administration of the child support function for state government. Keep in mind, state government is the primary actor in this. The DAs, district attorneys, do play a role, but the DOJ is the primary actor. This general fund matches generally at a $2 of federal funds to $1 of general fund. In addition, there are recoveries and other things that represent the other funds that are on that line. I think everyone pretty much understands the basic function of the child support, collecting from non-custodial parents and providing that support to the families where the kids are located. The third line is under the category of services to public safety general fund. There are two items under this general heading. These are those functions that are either, in terms of line three, these are functions where the Attorney General is representing the state's interest against various offenders that have appeals in the process, in the judicial process. In many cases, the DA will play that role, the prosecutor role in the district courts, but if those offenders appeal it, it is up to the Attorney General's staff to represent the state's interest instead of the DA's. And in many cases, many of these folks are already a resident of the Department of Corrections. This is general fund, and some of this money is double counted in line one as other funds because they charge against the general fund to pay for those costs that can't be recovered from an agency or a specific source. The next line, district assistance, organized crime. This is a general fund item. It's either helping DAs in their general responsibilities, providing technical support in very limited cases, acting as the DA if for some reason the DA is no longer operating in that county. The organized crime unit is a variety of functions that deal helping local agencies, providing the lead, what it might be in fighting crime in the state.
Is there any, because I don't recall, is there any relationship of activities in this area to Homeland Security?
Madam Chair, members, I think that the main connection would come through the work of, two aspects. One, the work of the Criminal Intelligence Unit, which is the central unit for the gathering of intelligence within the law enforcement community in Oregon, that would also pertain to intelligence about activity that could be viewed as coming within the purview of domestic terrorism, if you will. That would be, I think, the primary connection at this point in time.
And I'm looking further down at item 12, which is the Terrorism Intelligence Network. Does that address what you just spoke to as well?
That's correct, Madam Chair, in part.
Are there shared FTE with Homeland Security?
Madam Chair, between the Department of Justice
yes.
and the Department, not to my recollection, Madam Chair.
Okay. Please continue.
Under services to victims, these are the major programs that in some way assist crime victims, either paying for things like medical bills or in limited cases, cash assistance. That's line 5, the Crime Victims Compensation Assistance Program. Line 6 is the basic consumer protection and financial fraud activities of the Attorney General's Office and Department of Justice. That's probably what the public sees the most of, I'm guessing, in terms of the function of the agency in the press and things. This, just some sort of financial background issue. In previous biennia, this had some general fund, generally, I think, $2 million roughly in it. In the 2003 session, the funding was eliminated the general funding to rely more on the other fund sources, which in large part are collections from businesses and other folks that enter into an agreement with the Attorney General to pay in lieu of fines and other things. I will say in phase two that the agency will probably come forward and talk a little bit about the cash flow in that consumer protection fund and the problems that might be developing toward the end of next biennium.
Going back to the crime victims compensation and assistance, a reduction in the governor's budget, 10%, and the impact of the reduction is what?
Madam Chair, the reduction is in the flow from the criminal fines and assessment account, and that stream into the department goes partly to the victims' compensation program, and the other part is distributed out to the district attorney's victim assistance programs, the MAPs.
Does the reduction mean, Mr. Attorney General, that there's less capacity to serve victims? Is that how we should understand it?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay.
Number 7, child abuse the CAMI program. Excuse me. these are funds that, on the most part, I think flow out.
Senator Winters, if you're listening,
I'll pay a dollar.
Okay.
These are funds, if I'm not mistaken, flow mostly out to local, various nonprofit groups and others. And this was also cut by 10% in the governor's budget, as well as the next item, the domestic and sexual violence grant program. Similar to the number 5, these had been CAMI fund or CFA or criminal fines and assessment funds and are now a general fund in the governor's budget.
Senator Devlin.
Madam Chair, just a note probably for phase two and maybe a clarification from Doug.
with the governor's conversion of criminal fines and assessments to general funds and then bringing them back, is some of the reason, the underlying reason why you have some reductions in these programs because of the priority that the Board of Police Safety Standards and Training has given in terms of the use of those funds and their expanded cost of their new facility and programs? If that's what's driving the shortage in terms of criminal fines and assessments, regardless of whether you're talking general funds or criminal fines and if they're being replaced.
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, I'll take a try, and if someone from the representative of the governor wants to jump up and change my speaking, he can. When the governor, I think, was building his budget and taking a look at if you kept the same split between general fund and criminal fines assessment as the last legislature did, you would have seen roughly cuts, I believe, of 29 or 30% in all those programs, mainly driven by the increasing DPA or Department of Public Safety and Standards and Training. The governor then decided to dedicate all those criminal fines and assessment to the general fund, and then took a 10% cut in those programs, which I think was sort of the general reduction amount that he was using at the time. So there are a lot of programs throughout the budget that are cut by roughly 10%.
Please continue.
Follow-up. Not saying that there isn't the underlying issue of shortage of funds, but one of the ways this could have been addressed would have been to straightforwardly say that part of the BPS, the Board of Police Safety Standards and Training, I'm not even going to put a bill in to change that name.
Why don't you just put a bill in the pig?
If you just decided to pay a portion of them, their costs from general fund dollars, if there isn't the underlying issue simply of just a short of funds in the entire system, those criminal fines and assessments that are being collected could cover these programs and a portion of the Board of Police Safety and Standards and Training's budget. So it isn't really a decline in criminal fines and assessments at all that has generated this.
Senator Devlin, I don't believe it is. I have to take a look. Those do grow from 0305 to 0507. Whether they can keep up with the program growth, I'd have to go back and check. But it really was the cost of the new training facility that drove.
Final follow-up, Madam Chair.
Certainly.
There are already bills in the Senate pending that actually would increase criminal fines and assessments for other related programs in terms of, I saw one the other day. Part of the whole rationale behind some of this tying of funds is the underlying people the funds are coming to and the victims that they are going to. And so I just want to put it on the record again that I don't agree with running the criminal fines and assessments through the general fund.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doug, could you walk me through what the domestic and sexual violent grant programs are? I'm trying to get it based on working human resources. We're trying to kind of sort out where the various domestic violence funding programs, how they're fitting together and where they're going.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, again, I'll take whatever input from the Attorney General and his staff, but basically these are grants to various nonprofit groups, I believe, on the most part, that are out there in the community. I don't think there is necessarily any overlap in funding streams between the programs of human services and these, but I know there have been a number of people that have talked about trying to coordinate them better or combine them in one place for that reason.
Representative Hannah.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Attorney General, can you help us again with that? I think Representative Hansen and I are both on that human services side of the coin as well. The child abuse intervention and the sexual violence grant programs,
do either one of those involve legal services for those folks, or protection, for instance, of children and child abuse, or are they for training through those nonprofit agencies? Could you just expand on that, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, the child abuse multidisciplinary intervention program is, to my knowledge, doesn't involve legal services. It funds the assessment program, which is intended to bring a multidisciplinary professional response to child abuse in Oregon. High quality multidisciplinary professional response to child abuse, child sex abuse primarily. The domestic and sexual violence grant program, likewise, is not, to my recollection, I don't recall it has any legal assistance grants within it. It is a grant that grants monies to nonprofit providers who are providing various forms of services and assistance to victims of either domestic violence or sexual assault. And the enabling legislation for the original grant program specified that a certain percentage of the grants must be made to sexual assault service providers.
Follow-up, Madam Chair? So they both are for victims?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, yes.
And could you back to the child abuse multidisciplinary intervention program. Just in a short paragraph, what would that look like? A child would come through the system, and you would aim at them what kind of resource?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, primarily through these regional assessment centers that are in different locations around Oregon, provides a very victim-friendly and professional way to both provide initial medical assessments of the child, interview of the child in terms of obtaining the facts as best one can of the circumstances. They are very almost residential-like in their atmosphere. They're extremely child-friendly, intended to make that experience as gentle as possible as the child is worked through to addressing its needs, the child's needs, and then as a segue to actions by law enforcement in terms of potential follow-up prosecutorially of the particular case.
One more time, Madam Chair, follow-up. So it would facilitate that victim getting proper counseling to determine whether they could or could not participate in a trial and that kind of thing?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, in part, yes, I believe it would meet that need. But I think that the more fundamental sort of basic objective of the program is to provide in the most child-friendly way possible initial response to children who have been or who are believed to have been victims of child abuse,
okay,
medically, and then in terms of the interaction with authority and attempting to try to draw from the child information about what has happened to the child.
Thank you.
Does that satisfy your questions?
Yeah. Madam Chair, it's one of those issues that as we look at these line items and as we each one struggle of how does that fit in the system and do the dollars get to the victims versus do the dollars go to programs that may or may not serve? And then as we look on down the list, you got the high-intensity drug trafficking and those things. So it's just a matter of trying to understand enough.
Certainly.
To be able to put a number to those line items, and it's not one I know a lot about.
Well, you raise excellent questions and a very good point, and I think in phase two, Mr. Wilson and I are starting to think alike. here. In phase two, it's an opportunity to bring in the Department of Human Services and unpack that piece around the domestic and sexual violence programs, and also the child abuse piece as well. And, you know, we talk about making grants to nonprofits, but there's also for counties in this relationship. So again, in phase two, we can visit those issues. What I would remind us of at this point is our principles, the principles to guide public safety judicial prioritization, this committee's principles. And the leading one is that Oregonians have a right to be safe. And the very first line under that principle says that public safety is essential to protecting victims and communities, and is always our first priority. So as I look at the line items that are listed here under services to victims, I'm reminded again of the principles that we've set forth as a committee. And Mr. Attorney General, I hope that these principles have been provided to you, that a copy has been provided.
I'm sure they have.
Okay. Thank you. Please continue, Doug.
Madam Chair, members of subcommittee, number 9 is the next item, the Medicaid fraud unit. The federal Medicaid law requires each state to have a medical fraud unit. Ours is relatively small in comparison to states of like size, but from what I understand is quite effective. The funding here, I believe, was reduced by close to 10% in the governor's budget, so it does reflect a small dollar, but large 10% cut to the program. This is activities of investigation and as well as legal actions against those that are found, both providers and consumers, in terms of in some way frauding the Medicaid program. And recoveries are based on the federal-state match in the Medicaid rate between the federal government and the state government. And as you can see, you get a significant share of federal funds in this program. Line 10 is the Department of Justice's role or funding in the high-intensity drug trafficking program. The state police received the federal funds, which I think was like $5.4 million. I'd have to go back and check the previous sheet. Much of that money flows to local government.
That's correct.
But part of it flows to the Department of Justice for their activities around the high-intensity drug trafficking, or the what is usually referred to as the HIDA program.
That's Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you referenced that, Doug, because it's 5.4, but they're only getting 3 people. So we're only going to have 3 people out there, but we're going to have 12 lawyers. So this should be interesting.
Not only is it interesting, there should be some explanation.
Madam Chair, sorry, I was looking at the sheet when I heard 12 points. Madam Chair, if I know, the HIDA funding, excuse me just a moment, I mean.
I believe it's not 12 attorneys. There's investigators in there, too.
At the DOJ level, Madam Chair, Representative Wisman, at the DOJ level, it's a research function. I'm sure it's not funding attorneys.
And investigators. Members of the subcommittee, if you ever get the chance, and I don't think there's probably time during phase two, an interesting visit to take is out there at the DOJ at the building out in Hawthorne that includes the HIDA staff and some of the other organized crime teams of the DOJ and the state police are in the same building, and it's quite interesting. Moving on, number 11, Western States.
Madam Chair, I hope the Attorney General didn't take that comment. Got to have some humor, you said.
And he has a wonderful sense of humor.
Except on why you're judging.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, at least you didn't say there are 12 attorneys. That must give you 36 opinions.
Continuing, Rights 11 and 12 are they receive other funds from various sources for the Western States Information Network and the Terrorism Intelligence Network. They support, if I'm not mistaken, the organized crime functions up in line 4 in part. They're separated for funding source reasons. And I'll let the Attorney General describe if he wishes any further on the function of those two items.
Just to add one comment, Madam Chair, members, the Western States Information Network, or WISN, is really a narcotics intelligence sharing activity. So it's drug defense focused.
What's the relationship to the previous HIDTA?
Madam Chair, members, the HIDTA is really a program to augment local prosecutorial investigative, primarily local prosecutorial investigative resources in areas designated by the government to be, federal government to be high drug offense areas. So it does ultimately take the form of assistance to on-the-ground resources of certain counties, if you will, prosecution investigation functions in various certain counties designated as HIDTA counties.
Continuing the next item, line 13, it's actually just a combination of a number of various funding sources. In terms of public safety, you see racketeering, revolving fund, the assets or forfeiture, marijuana eradication, meth offset. There's a number of different funding sources that are in that line. And you also notice there's no staff, so those funds are being used elsewhere in the agency, supporting programs on the most part. Or did some of the funds flow to local government? I'm not sure. They do flow to local government.
Particularly marijuana eradication.
The marijuana eradication. Moving on, line 14, the non-participating manufacturers. This line is a requirement under the settlement with tobacco companies, or as a side settlement. I don't know the best way to describe it, but states are required to basically monitor those manufacturers that are not party to that larger agreement with states, and there are responsibilities under that that understanding or that agreement that that the department has. Without these funds and this staff, the millions of dollars the state receives in tobacco settlement funds would be at risk. Number 15 is the Tobacco Tax Compliance Task Force. This is that joint program with the Department of Revenue, Oregon State Police, and Department of Justice. Each play a different role, either as revenue agents or law enforcement or investigation / legal representation and prosecution in terms of looking at how firms and others are complying with the tobacco tax laws. Again, this was reduced in the governor's budget and is back to the level. It was basically the same level of staff as originally designed in the program a couple biennia ago. The next item, item 16, is a cooperative disability investigations. I believe these are funds that come from Department of Human Services in terms of investigating and prosecuting folks that are violating in some way the disability portions of the Social Security Act. Line 17 is the program that monitors various charities, investigates complaints by the public about charities. It is funded through various fees and assessments to registration of charities. And the final, or not the final, but number 18 is gaming. These are, I believe, the nonprofit gaming, bingo games, those kinds of things, not the same functions that this Oregon State Police have with the lottery or tribal gaming. These are the bingo hall down the street or other types of charity or nonprofits that might be using gaming to gaming proceeds to fund their activities, and they are required to register with the for a license or some kind of certification with the Department of Justice. And the final item, line 19, is a federal grant that I believe the Department of Justice got about a couple of years ago or a year ago, if I'm not mistaken. Basically, when there's violence in schools, there is a hotline that schools can call that's operated by the Department of Justice, in part to sort of collect on what information of what's happening out there in the schools.
In phase two, let's have some discussion about how that works and how is it working. There's no staff assigned to that or no positions. Some clarity would help.
And Madam Chair, Member Subcommittee, that is, there are 19 programs.
Comments, questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Attorney General, for your time this afternoon. And to your staff, thank you so much.
To the members.
Staff, bring one down. Your staff.
They got just the point.
Go on. No, you made a mistake. Give me another one.
Okay.
I made a mistake.
If you are ready, members, to pass your sheets in, you can do it now or get them to Doug as quickly as possible. Moving to item number 3 on the agenda, subcommittee announcements.
Madam Chair, I know that one member has called me on that cannot make the April 8th, if that's the date we set for the state penitentiary tour. So we will have to try to figure out what date works the best without affecting the schedule too much. One problem with phase two, it's not a problem, one time constraint with phase two is that's when the public testimony is to occur, and it starts compressing the amount of time that's been answering questions that you may have with the agency and presentations.
Mm-hmm. Well, the public testimony is a priority, and I would put that as a priority in front of taking the tour of the state prison, even if we have to look at doing the state prison on a Friday, which is currently being looked at as an off day, or we'll find a way to work it out. But the public testimony is an absolute priority. Any other comments for the good of the order? Members, thank you very much for your work, and Mr. Wilson, as always, thank you for all of your work coordinating the efforts of this committee.
Madam Chair, I think there were still questions on Oregon Youth Authority, if I'm not mistaken, that Sheila may want to bring back tomorrow. If you could just say that you're going to carry it over till that bill number.
All right. 5530, Senate Bill 5530 will be carried over for some work tomorrow. Oregon Youth Authority. We're adjourned.